Chapter 2 The Man in the Dark. The bandit's house had differed in no way from the common houses of the village. It was of broken limestone, single-storied, with a flattish, solid-looking roof of slabs of the same material. The door and the only window I could see from the street had been closed with rough masonry. 100 or so fairgoers stood before the house now, talking and pointing. But there was no sound from within, and no smoke issuing from the chimney. "Is this commonly done hereabouts?" I asked Jonas.
"It's traditional. You've heard the saying, a legend, a lie, and a likelihood make a tradition?"
"Seems to me it would be easy enough to get out. He could break through a window or the wall itself by night, or dig a passage. Of course, if he expected something like this, and if it's common, and he was really engaged in spying for Votalis, there's no reason he shouldn't. He could have supplied himself with tools as well as a quantity of food and drink."
Jonas shook his head. "Before they close the openings, they go through the house and take everything they can find in the way of food and tools and lights, besides whatever else may be of value."
A resonant voice said,
"Having good sense as we flatter ourselves, we do indeed."
It was the alcalde, who had come up behind us without either of us noticing his presence in the crowd. We wished him a good day, and he returned the courtesy. He was a solid, square-built man whose open face was marred by something too clever about the eyes.
"I thought I recognized you, Master Severian. Bright clothes or no? Are these new?"
"They look it. If they don't give satisfaction, speak out to me about it. We try to keep the traders honest that come to our fairs. It's only good business. If he doesn't make them right for you, whoever he is, we'll duck him in the river, you may be sure. One or two ducked a year keep the rest from feeling too comfortable."
He paused to step back and examine me more carefully, nodding to himself as though greatly impressed.
"They become you.
I must say, you've a fine figure.
A handsome face, too, save perhaps for a bit too much pallor, which our hot northern weather will soon make right.
Anyway, they become you and look to wear well. If you're asked where you had them, you might say, salt is fair.
Such talk does no harm." I promised I would, though I was far more concerned about the safety of Terminus Est, which I had left hidden in our room at the inn, than about my own appearance or the durability of the lay clothes I had bought from a slop man.
"You and your assistant have come to see us draw out the miscreant, I suppose.
We'll be at him as soon as Mazman and Zebalt bring the post. A battering ram is what we called it when we passed the word of what was intended.
But I'm afraid the truth is that it's nothing more than a tree trunk,
and not a big one either. Otherwise, the village would have had to fee too many men to handle it.
Yet it should do the work."
"I don't suppose you've heard of the case we had here 18 years gone?"
Jonas and I shook our heads.
The alcalde threw out his chest, as politicians do whenever they see an opportunity to speak more than a couple of sentences.
I recall it well enough, though I wasn't more than a stripling.
"A woman. I've forgotten her name, but we called her Mother Pyrexia. The stones were put up on her, just like what you see here, for it's largely the same ones doing it, and they did it in the same way. But it was the other end of summer, just at apple-picking time, and that I recall very well because of the people drinking new cider in the crowd, and myself with a fresh apple to eat while I watched. Next year, when the corn was up, someone wanted to buy the house. Property becomes the property of the town, you know. That's how we finance the work. The ones that do it take what they can find for their share, and the town takes the house and ground. To shorten a lengthy tale, we cut a ram and broke through the door in fine fashion, thinking to sweep up the old woman's bones and turn the place over to the new owner."
The alcalde paused and laughed, throwing back his head. There was something ghostly in that laughter, possibly only because it blended with the noise of the crowd and so seemed silent. I asked,
Wasn't she dead?
It depends on what you mean by that. I'll say this. A woman sealed in the dark long enough can become something very strange, just like the strange things you find in rotten wood back among the big trees. We're miners mostly here in Saltus, and used to things found underground. But we took to our heels and came back with torches. It didn't like the light, or the fire either.
Jonas touched me on the shoulder and pointed to a swirl in the crowd. A group of purposeful-looking men were shouldering their way down the street. None had helmets or body armor, but several carried narrow-headed pilots, and the rest had brass-bound staves. I was strongly reminded of the volunteer guards who had admitted Draught, Rosh, Ita, and me to the necropolis so long ago. Behind these armed men were four who carried the tree trunk the alcalde had mentioned, a rough log about 2 spans across and 6 cubits long. A collective indrawn breath greeted them. It was followed by louder talk and some good-natured cheering. The alcalde left us to take charge, directing the men with staves to clear a space about the door of the sealed house and using his authority, when Jonas and I pushed forward to get a better view, to make the crowd give way for us. I had supposed that when all the breakers in were in position, they would proceed without ceremony. In that, I had reckoned without the alcalde. At the last possible moment, he mounted the doorstep of the sealed house and, waving his hat for silence, addressed the crowd.
Welcome, visitors and fellow villagers. In the time it takes to draw breath thrice, you will see us smash this barrier and drag out the bandit Barnock. Whether he be dead, or, as we have good reason to believe, for he hasn't been in there that long, alive, you know what he has done. He has collaborated with the traitor Vodalus's Cultularii, informing them of the arrivals and departures of those who might become their victims. All of you are thinking now, and rightly, that such a vile crime deserves no mercy. Yes, I say. Yes, we all say. Hundreds and maybe thousands lie in unmarked graves because of this Barnock. Hundreds and maybe thousands have met a fate far worse. Yet for a moment, before these stones come down, I ask you to reflect. Vodalus has lost a spy. He will be seeking another. On some still night not long, I think, from now, a stranger will come to one of you. It is certain he will have much talk. Like you, someone shouted to general laughter. Better talk than mine. I'm only a rough miner, as many of you know. Much smooth, persuasive talk, I ought to have said, and possibly some money. Before you nod your head at him, I want you to remember this house of Barnock's, the way it looks now, with those ashlars where the door should be. Think about your own house with no doors and no windows, but with you inside it. Then think about what you're going to see done to Barnock when we take him out. Because I'm telling you, you strangers, particularly, what you're about to see here is only the beginning of what you'll be seeing at our fair in Saltus. For the events of the next few days, we have employed one of the finest professionals from Nessus. You will see at least 2 persons executed here in the formal style, with the head struck off at a single blow. One's a woman. So we'll be using the chair. That's something a lot of people who boast of their sophistication and the cosmopolitan tincture of their education have never seen. And you will see this man. Pausing, the alcalde struck the sunlit doorstones with the flat of his hand. This Barnock led to death by an expert guide. It may be that he has made some sort of small hole in the wall by now. Frequently they do. And if so, he may be able to hear me. He lifted his voice to a shout. If you can, Barnock, cut your throat now. Because if you don't, you're going to wish you had starved long ago. For a moment there was silence. I was in agony at the thought that I should soon have to practice the art on a follower of Vodalus.
The alcalde raised his right arm over his head, then brought it down in an emphatic gesture.
All right, lads, at it with a will.
The four who had brought the ram counted 1, 2, 3 to themselves as if by prearrangement and ran at the walled-up door, losing some of their impetuosity when the two in front mounted the step. The ram struck the stones with a loud thump, but with no other result.
All right, lads, the alcalde repeated. Let's try it again. Show them the kind of men Saltus breeds.
The four charged a second time. At this attempt, those in front handled the step more skillfully. The stones plugging the doorway seemed to shudder under the impact, and a fine dust issued from the mortar. A volunteer from the crowd, a burly, black-bearded fellow, joined the original ramsmen, and all five charged. The thump of the ram was not noticeably louder, but it was accompanied by a cracking, like the breaking of bones.
One more, the alcalde said.
He was right. The next blow sent the stone it struck into the house, leaving a hole the size of a man's head. After that, the ramsmen no longer bothered with a running start. They knocked the remaining stones out by swinging the ram with their arms until the aperture was large enough for a man to step through. Someone I had not noticed previously had brought torches, and a boy ran to a neighboring house to kindle them at the kitchen fire. The men with the pilates and staves took them from him. Showing more courage than I would have credited to those clever eyes, the alcalde drew a short truncheon from under his shirt and entered first. We spectators crowded after the armed men, and because Jonas and I had been in the forefront of the onlookers, we reached the opening almost at once. The air was foul, far worse than I had anticipated. Broken furniture lay on every side, as though Barnock had locked his chests and cupboards when the sealers came, and they had smashed them to get at his household goods. On a crippled table, I saw the guttered wax of a candle that had burned to the wood. The people behind me were pushing to go in farther, and I, as I discovered somewhat to my surprise, was pushing back. There was a commotion at the rear of the house, hurried and confused footsteps, a shout, then a high, inhuman scream.
They've got him,
someone behind me called, and I heard the news being passed to those outside. A fattish man, who might have been a smallholder, came running out of the dark, a torch in one hand and a stave in the other.
Out of the way! Get back, all of you! They're bringing them out!
I do not know what I expected to see. Perhaps a filthy creature with matted hair. What came instead was a ghost. Barnock had been tall. He was tall still, but stooped and very thin, with skin so pale it seemed to glow as decayed wood does. He was hairless, bald, and beardless. I learned that afternoon from his guards that he had formed the habit of plucking his hairs out. Worst of all were his eyes. Protuberant, seemingly blind, and dark as the black abscess of his mouth. I turned away from him as he spoke, but I knew the voice was his.
I will be free, it said. Vodalus! Vodalus will come!
How I wished then that I had never been imprisoned myself, for his voice brought back to me all those airless days when I waited in the oubliette beneath our Matachin tower. I too had dreamed of rescue by Vodalus, of a revolution that would sweep away the animal stench and degeneracy of the present age and restore the high and gleaming culture that was once Earth's. And I had been saved not by Vodalus and his shadowy army, but by the advocacy of Master Palaemon, and no doubt of Drott and Roche and a few other friends, who had persuaded the brothers that it would be too dangerous to kill me and too disgraceful to bring me before a tribunal. Barnock would not be saved at all. I, who should have been his comrade, would brand him, break him on the wheel, and at last sever his head. I tried to tell myself that he had acted, perhaps, only to get money, but as I did so, some metal object, no doubt the steel head of a pilete, struck stone, and I seemed to hear the ringing of the coin Vodalus had given me. The ringing as I dropped it into the space beneath the floorstone of the ruined mausoleum. Sometimes, when all our attention is thus focused on memory, our eyes, unguided by ourselves, will distinguish from a mass of detail some single object, presenting it with a clarity never achieved by concentration. So it was with me. Out of all the struggling tide of faces beyond the doorway, I saw one, upturned, illuminated by the sun. It was Agius.